Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 28th of February. A recent article in the San Francisco Chronicle, written by the editorial page editor John Diaz, caught our attention. It was titled, "Why Have the Polls Been So Wrong?" And we thought it would be a good question for this hour. And it goes on, let me read a little bit of it to you. "The science of political surveys is taking a beating. Never have so many pollsters been embarrassed by such wide margins in one campaign season. Just last Monday, this past Monday, talking heads on cable news were hyperventilating about the implications of various polls that showed the Wisconsin Democratic primary had become too close to call. American Research Group poll showed Senator Hillary Clinton at 49, Senator Barack Obama at 43 with a margin of error of 4 percentage points. Was Clinton about to break Obama's win streak? No. Obama won by 17 points. And they've been wrong just all across the board. Certainly in New Hampshire, they never anticipated the huge margins of victory on the part of Senator Obama in various places. And now, some people just kind of discount them. You hear what the national poll is. You hear what the polls are in Texas and Ohio. And you wonder, well, are they wrong again? So what is going on? We're going to be asking Professor Nancy Mathewitz this question. Professor Mathewitz is professor and chair in the Department of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And her career in survey methodology has included service in the private sector, the federal government, including the Bureau of the Census and the Department of Health and Human Services. She was on the faculty at the University of Maryland and the University of Michigan and has served as associate editor for Public Opinion Quarterly and the Journal of Official Statistics. During 2008, she is serving as president of the American Association for Public Opinion Research. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Mathewitz, and our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 227-2050. Are there certain polls that you watch? Are there polls that you could do without? Could you do without all polling? Do you think that news organizations should just skip the thing because they've been so off? Have you been called by pollsters? Part of this conversation, we'll be asking the question, are people lying to pollsters? Have you ever done that? Because it's none of your business how I'm voting, so I'm not going to answer the question. We welcome your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number to call. Professor Mathewitz, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, we're happy to have you with us. It is an interesting race because never before have I discounted the polls so much, and they have you looking at the race in a whole different fashion. Some of the candidates are really winning by enormous margins. The races are not as close as they are. Some people are winning when they should have been losing. It's just way off. They're all way off. Why?
Well, they're not all way off, but it's certainly been an exciting, or as some of us would think, this year for primary season. So let's talk about New Hampshire. So,
sure.
New Hampshire, 9 polls all predicted that Senator Obama would win and Senator Clinton wins. Yet those same 9 polls all predicted that Senator McCain would win, and he did win. So it's a very interesting dilemma for the pollsters to try to figure out why the very same methodology can be quite accurate for the Republican side in the New Hampshire case, but not accurate for the Democratic side. When you think about polling for primaries, it's a very complicated issue. It's actually far more complicated than polling for the general election. You have to take into account that rules for participating in primaries vary. So in Wisconsin, for instance, we have a very open primary. That's not true in all states. So how will independents be voting is a big issue. And turnout has been an interesting question. So pollsters always, they collect their data, but then they have to make their predictions on an election based on who will and who will not actually go out and vote. And it's been an exciting race on the Democratic side with record-breaking turnouts, which has added and confounded to the pollsters' problems. Those are two of the issues. I think the closeness of the race and the volatility of the campaigns has weighed in. But I think it's also important to think about, and I know your guest in the next half hour is going to talk about journalism, the coverage of the horse race. So if I look at the press releases that came out just before the New Hampshire primary, and we'll take one example, in the CBS poll, 9% of Democrats said that they were undecided, and 25% of them said they could still change their mind, even though at the time that they were being interviewed, they did lean towards one candidate or another. Before New Hampshire, the press wasn't really covering both the undecideds as well as the volatility, with a quarter of the electorate saying that they could still change their mind. Since New Hampshire, I've noticed that in the reporting of the primaries, we're seeing much better coverage of those undecideds and the people who can change their mind.
And if you look at all of the polling for the Republican primaries, there haven't been many caucuses there. Have the polls been, you mentioned New Hampshire, have they been equally on the mark with other states?
Well, if we look at California, they were way off.
Yeah.
And in fact, several of the pollsters, the individual polling organizations, have been quite embarrassed by what happened in California. In part, I think there, and if you've been watching the media on this, there have been a lot of different hypotheses about what's going on. The American Association for Public Opinion Research decided that it was such an important issue and so important to our field overall that we formed a blue ribbon panel to look at and address and try to look at data to address what has been going on with what we call the horse race numbers this year. But I think it's also really important to realize that the polls that are done for the primaries and for the general election are just a part of what our industry does. And so while they have enormous amount of coverage this year with respect to the pre-election polls, you have to step back and realize that much of the data that we know about ourselves, whether it's the unemployment rate, the consumer price index, the kind of cookies we like, or what we like to watch on television, are all based on survey data. So the industry is watching the horse race, and we you know, like to see what how good a job we do. But as a field, as a profession, there's certainly a lot of other important surveys that are done besides election polling.
Right. Let's look at the Wisconsin poll for a moment, and you tell me what you think happened here. It was, and the press played it this way, this is a very close race, four-point difference. They kept saying four-point difference. It's and it turns out to be a win for Barack Obama that is fairly substantial. How did that happen?
Well, I think, once again, in Wisconsin, there were only three or four companies that were doing polling prior to the election last week, Tuesday. I haven't looked at their individual methodologies, but once again, you know, the issue here is, are you capturing, for instance, the young voters who you may only be able to reach by cell phones? Some companies include cell phones, some people don't. Are people participating? So when you call them, you know, if you don't get everybody to participate who a pollster calls, we suffer from what the industry calls non-response bias. So there are a lot of issues that are, and so I don't have one simple answer for you. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about this article in the Chronicle made mention of the fact that some people either will not talk to pollsters or they're lying to pollsters for some reason. Do you think that's true?
You know, this is bantered about in the press once in a while. We actually, as a field, study this. And, in fact, one of the critical issues in looking at the Democratic side with both a woman running and an African-American running this year is that whether people will overinflate their support. They'll say, oh, yes, yes, I'd be quite willing to vote for a woman or quite willing to vote for a black man. But then when they go into the voting booth, they actually change their mind and say, no, I'm going to stick with, you know, a white male. So that there's a whole body of literature that addresses this, whether people just outright lie or whether there's just a lot of very complex issues is, you know, it's hard to decipher. We hope that people don't outright lie to pollsters.
Mm-hmm. Well, they haven't for a while now had a white male to vote for, which is one of the unusual things about this election, right?
Well, but in Wisconsin they did, because, you know, you don't have to declare who it is
right.
that you're. And if you looked at the ballot, there were still a lot of candidates on it. So whether I'm a Democrat, Independent, or Republican, in Wisconsin, the full ballot was open for anyone to vote for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain companies that you hold in higher regard than others based on, you know, how big the sampling is, how long they've been at it, how accurate they've been in some of the states here?
Oh, that's a dangerous question.
Sorry,
to ask
me, got to ask it because I want to know who to follow. I still like to look at polls, so I just want to know who's, and I think a lot of people do, who's most accurate here, who's the best.
Well, what's happened? There's been, so I'm going to hedge that question a little bit. What's happened in recent years is, prior to 2000, everybody watched national polls because we were interested in the popular vote. What's happened in the last three presidential elections, including this one, is that there's a lot more interest at the state level because of thinking about the Electoral College. So the firms who typically do the large national surveys, the firms that we all know, recognize by name, like Gallup, don't necessarily do sampling and studies at the state level. And so, yes, there are certainly organizations that I watch and who I know that their methodology is better. So, for instance, you know, if I watch the polls that come out of ABC, Washington Post polling, CBS, New York Times, the Gallup organization. But for the most part, you won't see them necessarily polling at the state level and doing the predictions at the state level. Ann Seltzer's group that's out of Iowa did some polling in Iowa and Michigan. She was absolutely accurate in mm-hmm. her predictions and, in fact, was criticized by members of the Clinton campaign when she called the election for Obama ahead of the Iowa caucuses. But she hasn't been, she doesn't do polling in all of the primary states.
Mm-hmm. And let's spend a little bit more time on these undecided voters. According again to this article, there are a number of people in these elections, Democrats particularly, who are deciding 24 hours before they vote, or maybe even a couple hours before they vote, how they're going to vote. You talked a little bit about this. This makes it virtually impossible for a poll to be accurate, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. If the campaign and the election is that volatile that people literally are changing their minds 24 hours in advance, there's no way if I do a poll that ends on Monday I'll be able to predict what happens on Tuesday. And that's what's, you know, exciting and fun about pre-election polling, is that trying to understand that. But realize, too, that the reason that a lot of people do polling is not just to call the horse race. And, in fact, the media has made a big deal out of being able to predict the horse race. Most people who are doing primary polling, while they're interested in the horse race number, what they're really interested in are all the questions that rarely see headline coverage, the why people are voting the way they are, who's voting for whom, what were the important issues. And those are for researchers in the field of political science and communications and other academic fields. Those are the real questions of interest from pre-election polls.
To your phone calls. We'll take them in just a moment. We're looking at the polls and why in the world they have been so off. Our guest the first half hour is Professor Nancy Mathewitz, and she is professor and chair of the Department of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. This year, she's serving as president of the American Association for Public Opinion Research. Joining us a little bit later, our guest will be from the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Amy Mitchell will join us. Her primary focus is managing and writing their in-depth research reports, and we'll be looking at the state of the news media reliance on polls, how they've changed their coverage because polls have been so all over the board. She is, and you know, we can talk about how the press has been covering the campaign too. I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about that. So, to your phone calls in a moment, 800-486-8655, or in Milwaukee, please, this number, 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller joining you after 11 today. And after 11, he talks with a reporter from Idaho about forest fire management. The gentleman is the author of Scorched Earth, How the Fires of Yellowstone Changed America. After 11:45, Larry and his guests talk about the delicate balance of government in times of public chaos. His guest, Chief of Staff to the Chancellor of UW-Madison. All right, let's go to your phone calls about polling, and we start with Jay from Columbus. Hello, Jay.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Your guest touched on one of the issues, I believe, and I believe it's cell phones. I really do think that the 25 and under crowd is underrepresented, and what you're seeing when you're seeing these big differences has to do with Obama can get the youth vote out more, and I think that's part of it. And then the other thing is I think that the what I would call the Rove Doctrine, where you appeal to your base, that was appealing towards the extremes, and it tends to be that the extremes are more effusive in what they're going to say, and that this election seems to be more of the middle. And I don't think they're – most of the people I know who are could go one way or the other are actually saying no comment or deciding at the last minute. So you end up with two things, an underrepresentation of the youth vote and a bump in the middle of people who don't make up their mind till the last minute or aren't willing to say.
Nancy.
Well, certainly the group of young adults, 18 to 30 years old, is a growing population that they only have cell phones. And so this has been a major concern for pollsters. And in fact, several of the large survey organizations, including Gallup and the Pew Research Center, have both now moved towards the inclusion of cell phones. Cell phones represent a complication for pollsters. There are laws about how you can dial them. And, of course, when you're thinking about safety concerns, we as an industry have held off interviewing people who by cell phone because of concern that they're driving the car or whether they're in a safe position. So it's been a difficult thing to move towards starting to interview people on cell phones, but certainly large organizations are doing that to be sure that we capture the people that only have cell phones, who no longer have landlines.
Thank you, Jay, unless there's more.
Nope, thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. Craig is next from Pewaukee. Hi.
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 With apologies to your guest and others, I'm 58 years old. I spent 27 years as a television news cameraman, and I've never believed in polls. Now, I'm not a high school graduate. I don't have a college education, but I have pinned up on my bulletin board a poll and a story that went with it, Kerry versus Bush campaign. The Times always has a sidebar explaining how they did their poll, and they polled 1,298 likely voters, and from those 1,298 projected how 50 million people were going to vote. Now, to me, it's like I just didn't fall off the turnip truck. I mean, how can possibly be?
Professor Mathewitz.
Well, this is where I have to hearken back to the field of statistics and where everybody starts to say, oh, no, not probability theory. But there, and so this is where, you know, most people who doubt about surveys worry about how can you possibly draw a sample of 1,000 or 2,000 people and have that be representative of the country. And it'd be a long-winded conversation to explain that. In fact, I have students who take a one-semester course in order to try to understand that. But based on probability theory, work that was done in the 1930s and 1940s with researchers who at that time were working at the War Department, we do know how to pick 1,000 or 2,000 people across the country and have them represent. We can certainly look at a lot of cases where surveys have been quite accurate in order to verify that science does work. So if this gentleman, Craig, would like to call me back sometime, I'd love to explain in more detail, but it's a tough thing to try to answer on a call-in show.
Thanks, Craig, for the call. We go to Mike from Racine next. Hello, Mike, you're on the air.
Well, I'm going to expand on that last comment, because I think that's at the real heart of the issue here is journalists oftentimes don't, well, I'll say most of the time, if not all the time, don't understand enough about statistics to properly report on them. Now, in the last caller, when he brought that up, is that As someone who is, you know, has a science degree, work in sciences, and use statistics on a very regular basis, I can tell you that there's a number of concerns that I have when I hear the reporting. One is people don't understand the word or don't understand the real meaning behind prediction. They don't understand the real meaning behind margin of error, and they don't understand the real difference between accuracy and precision. We can have margin of error, for example, is really a reflection on the methodology used, or is a measure that comes out of that, but it's not necessarily an accuracy measure. Accuracy measure is based on how well the statistical model was designed to fit the population. These surveys that are done, and I'm sure the professor can expand on this, these are an attempt to use a very small sample of people or objects or whatever to predict a larger population. That's what the difference between a survey or a statistical sampling and a census, which is 100%, where you poll everybody in a population. But when you talk about doing subsampling, the accuracy of the model is purely dependent on, or almost entirely dependent on, other issues than statistics. You can have a statistically valid approach, but a poorly designed model, and therefore an inaccurate survey. But all, you know, your margin of errors, which are based on the statistics, can be very tight. And you can say, well, I've got a 4% margin of error, but I'm off by 30%. That's totally legitimate within the world of statistics. That means you've got a poorly designed model, which more gets into the social science part of it. How will people answer the question? Will they answer the phone? Will they not answer the phone? Those are not statistical questions. Those are demography or social science questions. We have to be careful to separate the two, and when journalists are reporting it, they should make sure that they report on both sides of it so that we can understand, was it a well-designed model, and then we can talk about what the accuracy or precision is.
Uh-huh. Professor Mathewitz.
Well, both of these last two callers, and thank you very much for both of their comments, raise the points that the science of conducting surveys and polls is a very complicated science. It draws on multiple fields. We draw on the field of statistics in order to pick a probability-based sample so that we can draw inferences to the population, but we also draw on fields of psychology and sociology in order to craft questions that are unbiased, that will render accurate and reliable estimates. And it isn't easy to report on these when journalists have a small amount of time or a small amount of space in a newspaper or in a magazine. So I absolutely agree with Mike. And the margin of error that gets reported always in well-done surveys only reflects the fact that we have sampled from the population and not taken a census. It represents one source of error that can come into play with respect to polls and survey estimates, but it doesn't reflect all of the sources. And in fact, one of the exciting things this year with the election polls is that the organization that I represent this year, APOR, the American Association for Public Opinion Research, has developed a free online course. It's targeted to journalists, but it's certainly open to anyone. It's at www.newsu.org, and it talks about how to present information about surveys and polls so that readers can understand what were the questions asked, how were people selected, what was the size of the sample, all of which are important aspects to know about.
What is that again? NewsU?
NewsU.org. Yep.
And finally, before we switch guests here, Nancy, do you think that it is helpful for us to know who's ahead in a race, or can we just do without that information?
Oh, now you'd really want to have a political scientist on the phone rather than a survey researcher. I don't want to weigh in. I think what's always important to remember is that you know, horse race and pre-election polls are just one aspect. If we go back and look at the data after all of these primaries, there's a richness of data to understand what has happened during this primary season that social scientists will be able to try to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't have that without surveys.
Mm-hmm. Can you take one more call?
Sure.
Just one more call in polls I want to take for you. Scott from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi there. Kathleen, let me first say welcome back and a continued full and speedy recovery to you.
Thank you, Scott.
And let me tell you why I have not participated in some recent polls, and it has to do with falling a couple times for the we're polling about the election, and they start out by asking a whole bunch of very realistic-sounding calls. And then suddenly you find yourself in this bit of quicksand where they're asking you, would you still vote for so-and-so as attorney general if you knew that they were turning the keys and letting prisoners out right and left?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old it's an attack ad being foisted off as a poll. And I have gotten to the point where unless I recognize it as a, you know, somebody says up front, I'm polling for Pew or, you know, somebody major that I would recognize, I ask, who's funding you? You know, who are you working for?
Mm-hmm.
And I am amazed at how often I get a response, well, we don't know, they just tell us. Now, I don't know that they're being told if they ask you, don't tell them, or whether, in fact, the pollsters are ignorant of who really is behind them. But one way or another, I don't honestly know in those cases whether those were legitimate polls that I did not participate in or not, because I just said, ain't going to play.
Interesting.
Well, Scott raises a great point and one that has been a plague for the field. So, Scott, you're talking about what we refer to as push polls in the industry, which are basically unethical political telemarketing. That is, there's a call. It sounds a little bit like a survey. It starts out asking questions, but then it usually is asking a question exactly like Scott said. Would you still vote for candidate X if you heard that he or she was, and then there's some incredibly incriminating or damning information. These are unethical. We should make them against the law. The industry wants these banned, just as we wanted long ago to take away selling and fundraising under the guise of survey research. They are a misuse of survey methods, and in fact, they hurt us, all of us, because what they do in the long run is they exploit people's trust in the research process, and
mm-hmm.
that's really a
mm-hmm.
shame. And so I don't want you to participate in those either, and we have gone on record as an organization and an industry to fight very hard, and in fact, political telemarketing and push polls are illegal in many states, but they are not illegal across the country.
Yeah. Professor Mathewitz, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Professor Nancy Mathewitz, she is professor and chair of the Department of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and she this year is serving as president of the American Association for Public Opinion Research. How is the press handling these polls? Is it a major part of the way they deliver the news? What have they done with polls being way off? I know there are some commentators who have put their own margin of error on the screen just so they won't get caught having coverage go a certain way because of polls and then find out that quite the opposite is happening. And we'll broaden the conversation to talk about how the political reporting is going. And our guest is Amy Mitchell. Amy is Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, primary focus designing, managing, and writing their in-depth research reports, and this includes the annual report on the state of the news media and other more specific studies like coverage of various election cycles. She has been with the project since its inception in 1997. She is, she's authored and co-authored several works, including Thinking Clearly, Case Studies in Journalistic Decision-Making. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Amy. The number is 800-486-8655-227-2050. I didn't say that very clearly, 227-2050 for those of you who are in Milwaukee. Hi, Amy. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Amy, do you think that there is a place for polling? Is it helpful for the American public to know who's ahead and who's not ahead? Should the press even use polls?
Well, certainly part of the story, part of the coverage is who's doing well, who's got momentum, who is the public supporting. So that is a piece of the narrative, I think, and the public, you know, has a reason to know that. I think what doesn't often happen is that the number of who's ahead then gets taken to the next level of why, and what is it about the issues or their leadership style or who they are, and what that might, you know, really mean in terms of leadership skills and leading the country. So mm-hmm. oftentimes it gets left at that one stat, at the just the number of who's ahead and who's behind, and doesn't get driven into the more meatier coverage of why it matters to citizens.
Yeah. Tell me, on the whole, how you think the press has done with these wildly wrong polls for this election cycle. They've just been wrong in so many cases in terms of margin of victory, in terms of who the victor is going to be. It makes it difficult to take it a level beyond if your first level is not right.
Well, it does, and you know, it's certainly not new. I mean, we've had polls in the past where people have that have been way off, and we've also had, you know, races called, which we all remember, primary races and other election races, where the numbers were wrong, exit polling was wrong. What's even more unusual this year is the compressed time frame, and the fact that, first of all, it started so early, but then once the real race began, once the primaries started, it was one after another after another after another, and there was hardly time to breathe in between, let alone have this kind of natural momentum come into play. And so it was even more difficult for the press to step back, take a breath, and say, okay, what do these poll numbers mean? What does this primary mean? Not only just the poll numbers, but the actual results of a primary. What does this really mean looking long term? Does the fact that somebody won in a state in the South say anything about what they're likely to do in the Northeast?
Yeah, interesting. I don't think there's been enough of answering that kind of question you just posed.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the real crucial role of the journalist is to be able to help answer that for the public, to pull back and say, okay, we've all seen this number. Now what does it mean?
Right.
And as we get into even, you know, more continuous information coming at us, that ability to step back and provide the depth and the understanding is more critical than ever.
Mm-hmm. Is there something, so much has been made of the primary season, particularly on the Democratic side, that we're getting huge numbers of people going to the polls, that we're probably getting a lot of people going to the polls who have never voted before. We're tapping, I mean, something wonderful about it. We're tapping into that 50% of the electorate who say, I couldn't care less, and now all of a sudden they do care. Is it hard to report on this election just because you have no idea how many people are going to vote or we don't know how to analyze all those new people going to the polls?
Well, that certainly is an added dimension of complexity. There's also the question of who read yesterday's story and who didn't. You know, one is who's coming to the political process for the first time, but also is who's coming to these candidates. I mean, when they've now announced their candidacy a year plus ago,
right,
and the press has been covering who they are, what their background is, does that need to be repeated now?
Mm-hmm.
How much of their constituents saw that earlier coverage? The nice thing about the web is that, you know, those things can be linked to and encapsulated around, you know, today's news so that mm-hmm. people can get to the background earlier. But that's a tricky question. How much do you repeat what you've done before?
When do we tune in? When do the American people pay attention?
Well, traditionally, it's not until pretty late in the game. Oftentimes, you'll get, you know, your real core, you know, sort of the political diehards. Those are that, you know, follow it closely all year round. Following up through, you know, really up until the beginning of the primaries. And even when the primaries start, most of the public doesn't get that engaged because their primaries are later, they're not, you know, really thinking that it's their vote yet, or they know they're going to vote Democrat or Republican, and, you know, so they don't engage until the race between the two nominees gets closer and closer. I mean, oftentimes you have a real surge in people following late summer before the election. Mm-hmm. This year, there's a little difference because the race has been so close that people have realized, one, we have this interesting combination of some candidates that have been around a long time, have a long-standing relationship not only with the press but also with a national audience, and others that are hardly known. And so there are people to get to know better, people that are sparking curiosity, and a real race on both sides of the dial.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at, a lot of people get their news from television. Most people do, I think, in this country. Let's look at the way television has covered the race. In order for us to really know these candidates, and I'm sure that you're in the same category that I'm in. I've seen every single one of the debates, and I've been covering this for a long, long time and find it fascinating and love it, actually. You have to have cable television. You have to watch these shows to see the debates. I'm wondering, for those people who are watching nightly news, and I don't even know how many people watch nightly news now, are they getting a pretty good understanding of who all these people are, where they would take the country?
Well, one of the things we've found in coverage that we've looked at, and we looked at the early coverage in 2007, sort of the first half of the year, and we found this in past elections also, that the media overall tends to cover more of the inside story, the stories that are going to affect kind of who's running more than it affects the citizens who are going to do the voting. The who's up, the who's behind, as we talked about earlier, as opposed to really diving into the issues. Network news will do some more packaged kind of pieces that do a little bit deeper reporting. But, you know, particularly a lot of the cable talk shows, what we find is a back and forth between people that have already formed their opinion and are talking kind of from an inside knowledge standpoint. Mm-hmm. And don't step back and say, okay, you know, what is the impact going to be? How does this question address the issues that this constituency might care about?
Mm-hmm. There have been criticisms, and maybe this is just natural for a candidate to bring this up. There have been criticisms, particularly on the Democratic side, that coverage has been more favorable for Barack Obama than for Hillary Clinton. Do you examine whether or not that is true? Is there any validity to that criticism?
We do look at that when we talk about the tone of the coverage. Mm-hmm. In this race, we had examined tone again in the early part of 2007 and found at that point that the coverage was more favorable for Obama than it was for Hillary Clinton. We have not looked at it more recently and are actually in the midst of doing that, and we'll have a report out later in the spring that addresses that question. But there are a couple things going on here, and one is that, you know, to a certain extent, the press is also speaking to the events that are occurring. If Hillary Clinton was winning all these primaries left and right, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know, the press does have a long-standing relationship with Hillary Clinton, which, you know, has not always been a positive one. There's been some animosity, some feelings of uncomfort between the press and the Clinton family. Obama, they don't know so much. It's not that they have a wonderful rapport with Obama the way that they do have had with McCain in the mm-hmm. past. You know, McCain was somebody that really gravitated to the press and embraced them and created quite a, you know, sort of a close relationship with them, talking with them off the record between stops on his bus, and, you know, back in 2000. That's not the case with Obama at this point. There's an allure to him, which is certainly felt among the public as much as inside the press, but they don't have a real ongoing relationship with him yet. And so while there may be some longstanding feelings of Hillary Clinton, there's also a speaking to the events that are occurring. And, you know, that has to be considered when you think about the tone.
Mm-hmm. And it is true. It's been an exciting campaign because the people who were labeled the front runners, McCain's story is an unlikely story as well. Here he is, probably the candidate. Obama's story is a bit of a surprise to everybody, isn't it?
So it's an incredible tale. When you look just at John McCain, And he started as the front runner. I mean, in the very beginning of 2007, right. he was the one. And then when you got into the summer, his campaign was having a lot of trouble, money trouble, staffing trouble. His press coverage was horrible. And, I mean, it was basically, there's no way he's even going to make it to the fall. I mean, he's going to have to fold his campaign and, he's out. He was down and then suddenly, reemerges again. And with Obama, Hillary Clinton was getting, much more coverage than, anybody else was early on in the race. And
Yes.
So there's really been a roller coaster. And, it's been interesting to watch.
It sure has been. It's been fascinating to watch. Let's welcome phone calls for Amy. Our number is 800-486-8655. Amy Mitchell, our guest this half hour, director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. And we're talking about how the press is dealing with those polls and also how they're dealing with this presidential race. Are you satisfied with what you're seeing? 800-486-8655. Milwaukee callers 414-227-2050. And we have a couple lines open for you. So grab them. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Amy Mitchell and start with Bill from Deerfield. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kathleen. It's really nice to hear your voice on the radio again.
Thank you, Bill.
I'm also glad that you have this new guest on because it gives me a chance to ask a question about John McCain. And he's gotten such good press in the past. And I don't think the New York Times would have put four of their best political reporters on a story that was going to be a 24-hour news cycle. And McCain has already kind of gotten himself caught in a couple of misstatements. And how do you think he's going to fare with the press when more and more of this lobbyist story comes out? And just one to back up to the last half hour, I was surprised but not shocked at Barack's win in Wisconsin, because the last poll was done 3 or 4 days before the primary, and he was closing 2 or 3 points a day. So you add that to the 4 days, a little shift in the undecided. I thought he would win by 10. I didn't think it was going to be 17. But So I was surprised but not shocked.
Mm-hmm. Amy?
The McCain story obviously has gotten a lot of attention and has not proved to be a 24-hour news story. There are a couple different elements at play here. And, one is the fact that the bulk of this stuff occurred 8-9 years ago, and the lobbyist part of it, what was covered in the New York Times, was mostly reported on 8 or 9 years ago. So for people that have been following government and McCain and, that side of things, it wasn't new to them to hear about this. It was the potential sexual relationship that was, the possible new piece. But even there was no hard evidence. There wasn't anything, actually nailed down about that in this coverage. And there still hasn't been. Since the story was out, nobody's come out. Another source hasn't suddenly emerged to say, well, yes, I actually have evidence of this and I can substantiate that. That has not occurred. And as the candidate responding to this kind of coverage, you have to decide how much am I better off just ignoring, not responding, not commenting? Can I wait it out and let this die, or do I need to actually be proactive and address it? Many strategists say, you're better off just not taking part in the conversation and letting the story pass, which is what McCain started to do at the beginning. Interestingly, that it has resonated with the public. In the survey that the Pew People Press Project did last week on how much people have heard about this coverage, the majority of the public is aware of it and feels that it was wrong, the story that the New York Times ran. So, it has had an impact in terms of people at least being aware of it, whether it would change people's views. One of the strongest characteristic traits that McCain has carried with him over the years has been a sense of strong morals. the public really sees that mm-hmm. in him, and whether this begins to shake that mm-hmm. Has yet to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think this story is over, certainly. But it is interesting because, as you described earlier, of the relationship that the press has with McCain, I think maybe some people were surprised that it was a front-page story and that they didn't – the whole possible romantic relationship was included, which is what people came away from this, that that this would happen to McCain because he's got a cozy relationship or a friendly relationship with the press.
Right. And there, you know, there has been a sense that the press has at times – let some of McCain's personal, whether you call them, you know, when his temper would show or personal comments that he's made, has sort of let him off easy because of this relationship that they have with him. So people's radars are up as far as that goes.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call, Bill. We go to Diane from Milwaukee next. Hi, Diane.
Thank you. I often lie to posters, but what I mostly resent is the media picking our candidates. From the very beginning of the campaigns, they talked about the lesser candidates and the first tier and the second tier, and they gave less coverage to Edwards and some of the other Democratic candidates, and the same thing on the Republican side. And they picked Obama and Hillary to be the front runners, instead of waiting for a number of elections and giving equal coverage to everyone. And I really resent that, because I think we could have been missing a very good president by the media picking who we should be voting for. And I really resent the media for doing that.
Mm-hmm. It's a fair point, Amy.
The caller does have a point there. In this early coverage in 2007, you know, we found that just five of the candidates counted for more than half of all the coverage. And Hillary Clinton herself accounted for 17% of it, followed by Barack Obama at 14%. And the three Republicans then, you know, fell in after that. So there definitely was an early narrowing in. I think at the time we had 17 or 18 candidates running. So there was an early narrowing in. Some of the, you know, people in the press, you know, say, well, you've got to make some choices about, you know, you only have so much of your news hole that you can fill with this, and how are you going to cover them? But clearly there was a narrowing in quite early on in the game there.
And we thank you, Diane, for the call. Let's go to Chuck from New London. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning. I would just like to say that I'm a little surprised that CNN did not cover the last debate in Ohio. I was looking for it on TV and ended up watching Valerie Bertinelli's weight loss thing and watching highlights and clips of it. Other than that, I am very proud of Barack Obama and the way he's handled the criticisms that have been put on him. He's responded wonderfully with them. I think he's running just a very clean campaign. I've heard very little of mudslinging on his part. The whole Obama thing is just a movement that seems to be growing and growing, and I am very confident to say that I think we are talking about our next president of the United States.
It is a great story. Okay. Well, CNN, the debate was on MSNBC. That's why you didn't.
It was.
Yeah, that's
okay,
so you missed it.
My mistake. Everything yeah. else has been on CNN. And,
well, they've done half and half pretty much, but MSNBC, they're the two cable networks carrying them.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting, he actually raises an interesting point because, you know, there has been more sponsorship of debates. And, you know, when you're the network sponsoring it, then, of course, the other networks aren't going to carry it. And it does make it a little bit harder for, you know, for the public to figure out, oh, no, I did know there was a debate, but is this one that is CNN or, you know, is Fox even, you know, sponsored some? And, you know, where to find them becomes the question of the night.
You know, I wonder if anybody had discussions about let's simulcast our broadcast, because they certainly have analysts on after the broadcast. If it's on MSNBC, then CNN has analysts on afterward. I wonder both audiences would want to see these debates. Why not collaborate?
Well, you know, you could, but if it's an audience ratings game. And if, you know, you're going to sponsor this one, you want it to be your debate. You think the CNN, YouTube, you know, those two collaborated. But as far as cable's competition, you know, they weren't going to bring Fox or MSNBC into the mix there. And they got big audience spikes during the debates that they sponsored. So much of it is the, you know, the competition for the eyes and ears.
Right. Time for probably one more phone call. Mo from Madison. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I am hearing my own echoes, but my question is, how come I am not included in any of the surveys or polls, even when there was the Wisconsin primary?
Okay, your phone is not great. Evidently, he's never been called. How is it determined who's called?
I am not a pollster, right. But, you know, there is quite a science to the sampling techniques that are used. And now they're even, you know, moving into cell phone surveys and things like that because so many people not only don't answer their home phone anymore, but don't have a home phone. So I don't, I can't give you the ins and outs of how it's chosen, but there's, it's very random. Numbers get, you know, picked out of a database, basically, and then you have to fit the demographic criteria alongside that. So once you get a caller, you have to then, you know, work it so that you can represent the demographics of that community appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Amy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Amy Mitchell, Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. I will be with you again on Monday. I am easing back into work, and I have rehab tomorrow morning, so I'm going to that. But I'll be with you on Monday. We'll have our All Things Political segment. John Munson will be filling in for me tomorrow. And thanks to John for being here this week. That's it. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.